Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.
Happy Friday. Good afternoon. Welcome to the last Kildare Focus of the week with myself, Kira Noble. I hope you are well. Coming up on the show in the next couple of moments, we'll be speaking to the General Secretary of the Irish Pharmacy Union. Pharmacies are encouraging people to order their medicines in advance. This is due to the strain of staff absences, I guess, across the country due to the Omicron wave. Then we'll be speaking with the Director of Communications with the CCPC. They're issuing a consumer rights guide to January returns and faulty goods redress, obviously in terms of the Christmas presents, etc. Then we'll speak with the co-founder of Lift Ireland. Over 90% of the Irish public believe politicians should have to complete leadership training before taking up office, which I think is very interesting. I'd love to hear from you about that. Do get in touch. We'll be speaking about that about 2:25. Then we'll speak with the Public Information Officer for Alcohols Anonymous in Leinster on how to spot the signs of problem drinking. January can be a very difficult time for a lot of people. And Bridie O'Neill from Athy will join us. She was diagnosed with a heart condition and she's preparing for a 5K challenge to thank the charity which helped her rebuild her life, she says, which is the Irish Heart Foundation. And obviously it's great for the mind, especially in a month like January, to have focus on something like that. So be very interesting to hear from Brida and see if we can get involved. Do get in touch with me, as I was saying a moment ago. The WhatsApp and text line 0833 97 97 97. You can also call 045 898 999 or you can email studio@kfmradio.com. Sometimes I just don't know how to use words. Anyway, we are joined now by the General Secretary of the Irish Pharmacy Union. That is Darragh Loughlin. Good afternoon to you, and please excuse me if I don't know how to use any words today.
Good afternoon, Kira. And you're doing very well so far.
Am I? Good, good. It's nice to get that reassurance from my interviewee. Darragh, tell me, obviously a lot of people out there will hear the news. I was mentioning it a little earlier that pharmacies encouraging people to order medications and medicines in advance due to the strain of staff absences. Now, we're not trying to scare people or worry people, because a lot of people listening to the show will be, you know, getting prescriptions each month or week, etc., whatever it is. But it's just advice from yourselves at the Irish Pharmacy Union.
Yes, and to be clear, there's no shortage of medicines. There's no risk on that front. It's just that the effect of COVID and the Omicron wave on pharmacy staff is the same as it is all across the society and the economy. And pharmacies are, all of them are down one or more staff members. Some pharmacies are down two-thirds of their staff. I know one pharmacy in County Kildare that would normally have 14 staff, that this week is operating with 4 staff.
Oh my God.
And you can imagine the pressure that puts them under. The pharmacist was on the phone to me at 11 o'clock at night, two nights ago. He was still in the pharmacy. He'd been in there since 8 a.m. and he was just getting prescriptions ready for collection over the following day and the day after that. So what we're saying to people is, if you have repeat prescriptions or ongoing medication that you take all the time, don't wait until you run out before you pop down to the pharmacy to refill your prescription. Maybe give them a few days' notice, send an email or a text in and say you'll be in to collect your prescription in a few days, so that they have time to get it ready, because they're under real pressure at the moment, dealing with everybody that's coming in the door and taking care of all of the business and all of the people that they take care of.
Yeah, huge numbers of COVID-19. As has been said every day, really, since probably early December, we're not getting the full numbers each day. It was around 23,000 yesterday. It was a record figure. And we know, obviously, a lot of people aren't receiving PCRs because they can't book one. So they're out of the system in terms of positive cases. So the exact number is difficult to put your finger on. But Darragh, you yourself, obviously, owning a pharmacy and being a pharmacist yourself, in Galway, just tell us a little bit about your experience over the past week or so since Christmas. Just how badly have yourselves been affected, and talk about the people who are turning up in the pharmacies. Are they themselves worried? Are they reaching for things a little more, like maybe the more I guess effective masks, you could say, like the KN95s, etc.?
Yes, there's definitely a move towards the FFP2 or the KN95 masks, the ones that are particularly specialised in keeping out all but the most microscopic particles. In terms of staff, we've had staff with COVID, and we've also had other staff members who are close contacts of people with COVID. So those are people who can't come to work, which puts the rest of the team under a lot of pressure. We've had part-timers who've had to increase their hours to full-time to bridge the gap, and we're still running very lean. We're still trying to operate a vaccination service, but we're probably not doing as many vaccines as we'd like because we haven't got the staff to do it. We're still doing some, but not as many as we'd like.
So does that mean,
and there's
Darragh,
a bit of a delay on getting prescriptions out.
Does that mean that you're still getting a lot of people contacting you trying to book in a booster vaccine?
Yes, yeah, because the boosters are now open. The eligibility is open to anybody over the age of 16, provided that it's at least 3 months since the last dose of their vaccine. And lots of people who haven't had it yet, still very anxious to get it. People who are like student age, college going age, really want to get that before college reopens next week. And people who are teachers, young teachers, they want to get it. So anybody who hadn't had the opportunity before Christmas is still anxious to get it. Probably not seeing the same intense demand for it as we did before Christmas, but certainly people want it. Everybody is doing what they can to avoid COVID. But like you said, the Omicron variant, it is literally everywhere.
Yeah, Darragh, obviously a lot of people out there are controlling the controllables, especially over the past 22 months, because that's all we can do. And people have been turning to their pharmacies and local pharmacists and asking them in terms of vitamins, etc. Now, I know that you aren't, you know, saying that anybody should take anything specifically, but in terms of the vitamins in general, not so much branded, etc., what would you be advising people to take? Is there anything they can take in particular to help, I guess, ward off COVID, or if they were to be infected with COVID, which obviously we know a huge majority of the Irish public have been, things that could help them along the way?
Yeah, the most effective thing you can do to help ward off COVID, or to ensure that if you do catch it, that it is a mild form of the illness, is still obviously the vaccination. Nothing comes close to the vaccine in terms of mitigating the risks of catching it or mitigating the risks of having it. There is a lot of research that was published last year during the early part of the pandemic, which showed that people who were deficient in vitamin D often had worse outcomes than people who weren't. So anybody who's diet might be low in vitamin D would be encouraged to make sure that they take some kind of vitamin D supplement. And that's not just for COVID, because if people don't have enough vitamin D, that can impact on bone health. Vitamin D is essential for strong bones, and older people and people with osteoporosis are regularly prescribed vitamin D supplements to try and help sustain their bone health.
Yes,
that's
it is
something that people can do, but that's not it's not a wonder cure, but it just the research showed that there seemed to be a link between vitamin D deficiency and poorer outcomes from COVID, particularly in the early part of the pandemic. Now, luckily at this stage, almost everybody has had their first vaccination, although not everybody has had their booster. So people do have some level of protection. And as I say, that is still the most effective thing that people can do. That, and then, as you put it, control the controllables by avoiding crowded places. If you're indoors with other people, make sure you're masked up, make sure it's well ventilated, make sure you maintain your hand hygiene. Those are all far more beneficial things to do than worrying about your vitamin status.
That's very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Darragh Loughlin, General Secretary of the Irish Pharmacy Union. And as Darragh did say, it's not so much in terms of the medications there being any shortages. Pharmacies are just encouraging people to order their medicines in advance, because obviously a number of staff are absent at the moment due to this wave of the virus and the Omicron variant. Darragh, thank you very much, and we'll speak to you again soon. And of course, Happy New Year to you. I am joined on the line by Grainne Griffin, who is the Director of Communications with the CCPC. A lot of people do have unwanted Christmas gifts, and I don't know if any of you remember this, but I was talking about it just before Christmas, that I always do my shopping so far in advance because, I don't know, I don't want people to have the hassle of a Christmas gift that is completely unwanted and they have to do something with it. But the CCPC is issuing Consumer Rights Guide to the January Returns and Faulty Goods Redress. It is good afternoon to you, Grainne.
Good afternoon.
So a lot of people will be sitting at home, maybe looking at the unwanted Christmas gifts, you know, remote working, etc. And they want to know what they could do. Can they bring it back? Is the item faulty? What's the issue? So yourselves at the CCPC have obviously compiled this consumer guide. And if we begin with faulty goods, Grainne, what should people do?
Well, if something is faulty, you've got strong rights, because it's very different from just deciding you don't want something anymore. There's something wrong with it. It doesn't match up to what you expected when you bought it. And so you've the right to go back to the person who sold it to you, to the shop or the store that sold it to you, and either get a repair, get a refund, or get a replacement. So now there's a lot in that. And in terms of what you'll actually get, it does depend on like how significant is the fault. Like, is this like a minor fault, like a scratch on the side of something you bought, or is this a major fault, like maybe you bought a phone and it just doesn't work? So that comes into it. And then also, the thing to remember is it does matter how long you've had the item. Like, if you've been using it for a while and then a fault emerges, that's a different scenario from taking something out of the box and it just doesn't work straight away. So all those elements come into play when you're looking to see what might be the resolution that you get with a business.
And Gráinne, you would say if it's a gift and you don't have the receipt, what happens then if the item is faulty?
Well, if you're going back with an item, the retailer does have the right to say, okay, where's your proof of purchase?
Okay.
And that's fairly standard. Now, it doesn't have to be a receipt. It can be a gift receipt. In some instances, perhaps maybe even a debit card statement, you might be able to demonstrate that you bought a particular item from a particular store. Sometimes even people may have loyalty cards that allow you to look up past purchases with shops. If you don't have a receipt, it's not the end of the world. You can look for an alternative form of proof of purchase. But if you just walk into a shop and you say, look, somebody gave this to me, unless they can see in some way that you did buy it from them, like, they really don't have to live up to their store policy and allow you to return the item.
Now, the change of mind returns, this is always an interesting one.
Yeah, with change of mind, the first thing that I need to say is you do have change of mind rights when you shop online, and they kick in for 14 days after your package is delivered. And the reason you have those rights, and they're really, really strong, and they apply whenever you shop from anywhere within the European Union, including in Ireland, that means that you just didn't have the opportunity to pick up the item and look at it because you were buying it on the internet. So you'll always have a change of mind right for 14 days after the items turn up. However, if you do your shopping in a shop, you go in, you have a look, you pick it up, you decide you're going to buy it and bring it home, then that's a different situation altogether. You'll be totally dependent on the store policy and whether or not they accept change of mind returns. Now, the good news there is that most shops do. It's really good customer service. People really appreciate it. And in an awful lot of stores, you'll see that not only do they offer change of mind returns, but sometimes they'll offer them for up to a month, up to a year in some cases, or maybe for an extended period past Christmas. So you do need to just go back and check what did the store commit to at the time when they sold you the item.
Yes, and obviously in terms of the pandemic, it's a good point to make that a lot of clothing stores have had their changing rooms closed. So obviously that's something that, you know, people can bring back the clothing if they were only able to try it on at home, etc., for obvious reasons they weren't able to try it on in the shop. It is something to remember just in case people are worried if they didn't get to try on in the actual store. Now, more and more people, obviously, especially due to the pandemic, did turn to online shopping. Now, the delivery delays. There will be some people out there, Gráinne, still waiting for Christmas presents.
Yeah, there we saw delivery delays, like, for a whole bunch of reasons over Christmas, both because of demand, because of supply chain issues, because of customs issues of Brexit. And so the way it works with deliveries, if you're buying from within the EU, the business commits to delivering to you by a certain time frame or within 14 days. And if your goods don't turn up when they're supposed to, then you have the right to cancel the contract and to get a refund if they don't turn up by when they committed them turning up.
Okay.
And you don't have to wait to receive the goods. I mean, that's a factor for some people, particularly if they bought something really expensive and they want the money back. You don't have to wait for it to arrive. Once it's gone past that agreed delivery date, you can just cancel and look for your refund straight away.
And Gráinne, you mentioned Brexit there. Just if people did buy from British websites in particular, what is the story there with consumer rights?
Well, once the UK left the EU, European Union law no longer automatically applies when you're shopping from there. Now, in reality, because the UK has been part of the European Union for a long time, their consumer protection law is almost identical. Do you know, there's no massive differences in terms of what's actually provided for. But the big difference is that if something goes wrong, you'll have a really hard time if you need to take it a step further than actually dealing with the business directly. Like, if you go down and you try and lodge a claim with the small claims court using the European procedure, the UK isn't covered. Even the online dispute resolution procedures that are there to to support European consumers, they just don't apply to the UK. So that's something you really need to be very careful of, particularly if you're buying maybe something very expensive. We know from our research that kind of tech and audio products, people tended to buy them from the UK, and you really don't want to be taking risks if you're buying kind of expensive products like that and you're not sure you're going to be able to resolve any issues.
Gráinne Griffin, Director of Communications with the CCPC, thank you so much.
Kildare Focus with Ciarán Noble.
Nuala has been in touch on 0833 97 97 97. How are you, Nuala? She says, hi Ciarán, love what you're doing with the show. Thank you so much, you're very kind. She says she had the most unpleasant experience in Lidl in Naas today at the hands of a man who, when she asked him to step back because he was very close to her at the checkout, he became offended. The man informed her that he was a doctor of some 50 years experience. He told her loudly and aggressively. He called her a stupid B-word, said she did not know what she was talking about. She says she knows this man because she has worked with him, and yes, he is a doctor, a general practitioner, and as she did complete her purchase, he continued to repeat himself. It's not worth engaging with somebody like that, she says, in her opinion, and she says, what a shame that that man chose to disgrace himself. Would she do it again? Yes, without hesitation, she says, and the cashier was so kind with her. And with her eyes to her, she says, and her silent support was very much appreciated. She's asking, has anyone else had similar experiences? We've heard this all through the pandemic, people feeling uncomfortable at so many different times. I'm sorry you had a really bad experience. That doesn't sound very nice, Nuala. And obviously, you know, trying to ask people to give them a bit of space or whatever. I've heard different tricks, not that that makes any difference to you having that horrible experience, but, you know, people using the trolley cart in front of them to try and keep the space with whoever's in front or behind them. But I think when it comes to those who choose, you know, not to wear masks and maybe stand closer to people, a lot of the times it seems as if when you do try and interact, it doesn't end up in the best of circumstances. So I'm sorry about that, Nuala, and anyone else out there who has had a similar experience, do let us know. 0833 97 97 97. Now, I'm very interested in this. Sonia Lennon is joining us, the co-founder of Lyft Ireland. And there's new data here. Over 90% of the public, 91 to be exact, believe politicians should have to complete leadership training before taking up office. Good afternoon to you, Sonia. How are you doing? And Sonia, you should be there now. Apologies.
Hi, Ciara. Lovely to talk to you.
You too. Sonia, I remember in 2011, I had just turned 18 and there was a general election, and I remember, you know, looking forward to it, you know, voting for the first time. And I was very intrigued because I was learning more and more about, you know, the circumstances in this country at the time. As we know, the recession had just hit. It was a seismic change in this country, the 2011 election. But I remember thinking, it's funny when you see ministers would say, like, the Minister for Finance or the Minister for Agriculture, the Minister for Transport, whatever it may be. And by and large, especially to do with Irish governments over the years, the people that are in these roles may not actually have any experience with that sector whatsoever. So it makes sense why so much of the public think that leadership training should be completed before taking up office.
Yeah, it does, Ciara, and I think there's a couple of issues at play here. I mean, yes, the ministers can end up with portfolios that are out of their experience and knowledge, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because whole departments are below them to support them in their endeavours. But I think what we need to be very mindful of is how they lead their portfolio, how they lead the voters, how they lead society, and. You know, it's really interesting listening back to Nuala's experience in the supermarket. Leadership is in our everyday behaviour. So it's not just, you know, at the top table. It's not just in the halls of government or in boardrooms. It's how we choose to lead each other every day. And that doctor, for whatever circumstances, led himself very badly and caused offence and harm. And it was, you know, really down to kind of a lack of understanding, empathy, respect, all of that good stuff that we need to be able to lead ourselves as well as possible. And I think, you know, what we consider to be leadership has very much changed. And in the last 20 years, we've seen a real shift away from that kind of charismatic sort of white knight leadership that's, you know, trust me, follow me, I know what I'm doing, to a much more sort of rounded out version of who we need to be to lead people.
I'm interested in you saying we've moved away from a charismatic leadership. Who would you have classified as charismatic in terms of Irish politics, would say, previous to the last 20 years, if it is somebody?
Well, for me, I think of it more in terms of business, because that's my background. But even if you want to think about, for good or for bad, you would say that, say, Donald Trump is a charismatic leader, right? He falls under that category. I'm not saying that I'm attracted to his charisma or you know, that we are, as a nation, are attracted to his charisma. But it is that kind of my way or the highway, which is termed as charismatic leadership. Whereas actually what we understand and what the workforce is saying they understand, and therefore the electorate, is that they want to be value-led. They want to live in a country and be in a working environment where they can align to the values that are being espoused. So, you know, it's not good enough to say this is the way you must act and I'm going to do it my own way regardless. That just doesn't really wash anymore. And I think, you know, the survey, which is a kind of a representation of the Irish public, that Lift commissioned with Coin Research, shows that you know, over 90% of the public believe that there should be leadership training for our politicians, for our public servants, in education. That, you know, we have tend to have thought that, you know, leadership comes to us when we hit a certain level. But actually, you need to know the fundamentals and to be aware of them.
It's interesting, you know, I was mentioning to you there a few minutes ago about ministers and their portfolios, and you were saying it's not necessarily a bad thing, and I can actually totally understand where you're coming from when you say that. But I do feel in recent years, just, you know, when you hear from the public, especially, like, you know, with getting phone calls into the station, etc., people just feel that a lot of people in roles in government just don't have the experience that they should to be in that role. So that would lead me to believe that there's other people out there that they think fit the role better. Yet for certain reasons, those individuals, whoever they may be, are not putting themselves forward to potentially be a member of the Irish government.
Well, there's so much in there, in that statement, to unpack. And I could go in any direction. But, you know, it is widely believed that the higher up you go positionally, the less detailed knowledge in an area you need, because your ability to deliver results is based on a trust that you have in your advisors and in the people below you. So it's about building an ecosystem and a culture where people are functional, they're trusted to do their job, and they can deliver with accountability. And interestingly, in the survey, the traits that the Irish public believed needed the most work, if you want to take the top sort of three and a half of them, number one was honesty and integrity, which are two sides of the same coin. Number two was accountability, and number three was respect. So those are really big fundamental behavioural values that can be espoused by our leaders. Now, if you were to transpose them onto any minister, for example, and say, look, he may not know the absolute nuts and bolts of the transport infrastructure or whatever the portfolio might be, but he leads in such a way that he allows his experts to deliver efficiently and effectively. That's more important.
Yeah, well, just in regards to that, we've got a few texters in here, 0833 97 97 97, and Sonia, somebody has noted the current health minister, who is Stephen Donnelly, and this isn't about, you know, sides of the aisle or anything like this, so I hope it's not taken like that, but this texter does note that Stephen Donnelly is a structural engineer, and he's very much, you know, educated in terms of mechanical engineering. He went to MIT over in the States. I don't know if people know that at university, but it's, you know, the smartest
very prestigious.
Smart absolutely tend to attend MIT. But he is the health minister. So I know what we're getting. I might be getting into the being a bit too pedantic about it. But does it really make sense when we, you know, people who did, you know, study structural engineering end up in a role as big as health minister? Now, I know he probably didn't know there'd be a pandemic when he did accept the portfolio. But, you know, there's always a possibility for something like that.
So at Lift Ireland, what we believe and what has been borne out in the work that we've done and the research that we've done is that we all have capacity as individuals to lead ourselves and others. So every day we lead ourselves in a certain way with certain attributes. What we can do individually, regardless of the level that we're playing at, is to improve through awareness of our own areas that need help. So again, I think it's really hard to kind of say this person is wrong or right because of who they are and what they studied. Because I think there are ways to lead regardless of those attributes if you are aware of it. So, for example, we've worked with, you know, a lot of those really analytical minds, like a structural engineer, like an actuary, you know. And I think it can be sometimes more challenging for those personality types to understand the perhaps more fluid characteristics and behaviours of value-led leadership. It can be challenging just because of the way brains work to understand that, but it doesn't mean that it can't be improved. And I think it's less about looking at, well, these are the facts of the human and their qualification. It's more about how well are they leading.
It's really, really interesting conversation, Sonia, and really interesting research. As I did say, over 90% of the public believe politicians should have to complete leadership training before taking up office. And it does make a lot of sense. And Sonia, very good point you made there. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I hope it's not snowing wherever you are this afternoon, is it?
It is doing a little bit of snowing. And just also to say, Ciara, if anybody wants to read the research in full, it's available on liftireland.ie.
I was just about to say that, but you got there before me, Sonia. Thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us this
so
afternoon. Sonia Lennon, who's the co-founder of Lift Ireland. Now, Sonia did make a good point about Nuala's experience in Little and Nace, and she was noting how that can tie in with leadership. And we have had another texter in 0833 97 97 97 saying, "Hi, Ciara, that attitude is terrible. Unfortunately, there are people out there like that no matter what their profession is. Even without the pandemic, people need to be aware of personal space. It's basic manners." And that comes in from Jen. Very true. Even without a pandemic, some people don't like people. Most of us don't like people getting up close and personal for no reason. I feel a lot of the time when people do get so emotional in situations like that, I could be wrong. Maybe people will come for me for saying this, but really it's something else going on in your life probably, and you've just taken it out on that person. And unfortunately, someone like Nuala was just obviously in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that person did not want to hear what she had to say, and went off on one. It seems that they may have been distracted elsewhere in their life, because I don't think you'd really, if you thought about it, I don't think you'd really be that angry for someone nicely asking you to give them space in the middle of a pandemic. So Nuala, we hope you're not too bogged down by that behaviour a little earlier on. But obviously, keep your messages coming. And Joe has said, if you study engineering, you know nothing about health. So that answers the question. That's Joe over in Kildare. Thanks, Joe, for that. And we have also been, the same person who noted that Stephen Donnelly is a structural engineer said, he compared it to like putting a zookeeper into the health service. So very interesting to hear your take on that. And then Jen has been in touch. She's a New Bridge woman living over in South Carolina. Hey, Jen. And she says that she's had the experience all the time working at in a hospital in the waiting room, knowing that people have COVID-19 and they're walking around talking and then coming up to the desk without a mask on. She's constantly telling them that, can you please mask up? And she says about Nuala's experience, how was she supposed to know he was a doctor? But you know, she said that she think if she knew he was a doctor, either way, he should have known better and not have been so disrespectful. Obviously mentioning that it doesn't matter what your profession is. Anyway, do keep your text coming this afternoon, 0833 97 97 97. More after the break. Now, I am joined on the line by Breda O'Neill from Thai. Breda, a very big hello to you. And I just called you there and I didn't get to say hello properly because I was just about to pop back on air. So thank you for joining us this afternoon. How are you?
No problem. I'm from the Thai, but I'm living in Danesfort in Kilkenny.
Exactly.
I better put that in.
You are living in Kilkenny. I did note that in the press release. But you're an Thai woman, so we've got to put that in first, I guess,
yes.
Breda.
Yes, a lily white.
Yeah. Listen, you are 52 years old, and
yes.
You were diagnosed with ventricular tachycardia, I believe is how you pronounce it. And first, I guess, explain exactly what that condition is.
Yeah, ventricular tachycardia, or VTAC, or VT, it can be called as well. It's a heart rhythm disorder, arrhythmia. It's caused by abnormal electrical signals in the lower chambers of the heart. The upper ones are the atria and the bottoms are the ventricles. And the upper chambers don't have enough time to refill and send blood to the lower chambers. So that's usually what happens. So the blood doesn't get pumped around the body. So that causes dizziness and one of the symptoms.
That's what I was just about to ask you about, getting diagnosed and your symptoms prior to diagnosis.
I'd say a lot of people that, like, don't actually know about this, and I'm probably one of the lucky ones. The symptoms are dizziness, lightheadedness, palpitations, shortness of breath, and sometimes losing consciousness. A few times in the summer of 2019, I walk and laugh and fit enough, and hoovering, I thought it was something to do with my blood pressure. I felt a bit dizzy. So I took my blood pressure and it was okay. Then after a few different weeks and that, it kept going again. So I went to my doctor and I was sent to the hospital for an ECG, but VT doesn't always show up on an ECG there and then. It has to be done on a Holter monitor over a certain amount of time. So I was sent back out. Everything was okay. So then in September 2019, I went to work in the creche where I work in Kilkenny. And the VT started and it didn't stop that morning.
Now, Breda, it's very interesting because obviously you were diagnosed with this, but what you're doing on the 14th of February just shows that, you know, you can live your life. I guess it's a positive story about VT, because you are going to be taking part in a 5K challenge. And just before we get on to that, how does somebody who's diagnosed with VT, I guess, live their life to as much as a normal extent as they possibly can?
Well, I'm on medication at the moment. I attend an electrophysiologist in Dublin once yearly, and I can ring them at any time I want, and the service is brilliant. And the medication I'm on is excellent, and it's often tweaked according to, I can ring if something is not working, they'll change smaller doses in the morning and in the evening. It seems to work for me. I'm on flecainide and bisoprolol, and they seem to do the job. My condition is not structural, which means my heart is actually okay. It's just an electrical problem. So I had MRIs and ECGs and hearts. All of the checks were done on me, so my heart is actually sound. It's just the electricals that are causing it.
Mm. It's very interesting. It really is. And there's no better day, I guess, to raise money for the Irish Heart Foundation than Valentine's Day. It's all about the heart on Valentine's Day.
Yes.
And that's what you're hoping to do on the 14th of February.
Yeah, the Heart Foundation Love Run. It's a 5 kilometre walk or run. I've done it last year as well. And you can complete it anywhere over Valentine's weekend. You just register under irishheart.ie. And it's part of the IHF, the annual fundraising campaign that they do each year is done on this one in February. You get a free beanie as well.
Okay, and how can people register?
Thank you so much. Go under irishheart.ie and straight away there's a little box where you click just to register for it.
Okay, perfect. Well, Breda O'Neill, a woman from Athy living in Kilkenny, we won't hold that against you, Breda, but we really appreciate you coming back on to KFM, and best wishes to you. Really interesting what Breda is doing, obviously raising money for a foundation that, no pun intended, is so close to her heart and obviously helped her so much throughout her diagnosis and obviously living with the condition of VT. Breda O'Neill, thank you so much. Now, Owen, I believe you are over in the news booth. You have an update for us in regards to water outage in Kill.
Yeah, so an email from Irish Water just coming into us there in the last few moments. I saw on social media as well that some people in the Kill area were suffering water outages in the area. But Irish Water is working with Kildare County Council to restore water as quickly as possible to impacted customers following a burst water main in Kill. Whilst every effort is being made to maintain supply to as many customers as possible, the burst is impacting the water supply to homes in Kill Village, Johnstown, Furness, Terrace Lodge, Newtown Manor, West Town and other surrounding areas. Water service crews have mobilised and repairs are underway and are expected to be completed this evening. And typically it takes 2 to 3 hours following repairs for normal supply to restore to all customers affected by the unplanned outage. So just to give those areas again, Kill and Johnstown, and then some of the estates and surrounding areas, Furness Lodge, Newtown Manor and West Town in particular.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Owen, so much. If you were keeping in touch with our news a little earlier on, you did hear that Kildare Gardaí are renewing their appeal for information. This is on a missing teenage boy from Newbridge, Shane O'Connor. He's 17 years old. He was last seen yesterday morning in Talla. He is 5'6" in height. He has short brown hair and blue eyes. When he was last seen, he was wearing a black hoodie with a large print design in the centre, dark tracksuit bottoms, a wine-coloured t-shirt and white runners. Gardaí are concerned for Shane's welfare. So if you do have any information, Gardaí are asking people to come forward either to Newbridge Garda Station or, of course, any Garda Station across the country and the Garda Confidential Line. And if anybody needs those numbers, they are on KFM's website. You can check it out there. And just at the beginning of the show this afternoon, we were speaking with the Irish Pharmacy Union. The pharmacies around the country are encouraging people to order their medicines in advance. This is due to the strain of staff absences. And Sarah has texted us in saying many doctors' practices will email prescriptions directly to the patient's chosen pharmacy, and the pharmacy can then call the patient when it's ready. This reduces the waiting times in pharmacies, especially when we are trying to reduce our contacts. So thank you very much for being in contact, Sarah. Again, the text line 0833 97 97 97.